Relevant content for our members, by our members. This is TMC Connect.
So now's the time when you don't say something that you want, you don't want anyone else to know. Well, I'm glad you guys are getting sunshiny weather too. We're in the same boat after having a very dreary weekend here.
Yeah, we definitely had some quick heavy degree rain that came through. It was a warm rain, but it went through pretty quick.
We had, in parts of the Twin Cities, we had larger than golf ball size hail come through up in the northern ring of the Twin Cities sometime on Saturday. So, yeah. Hey, thanks everyone for joining us. This is the last week in mortgage today. We will get started here in just about 30 seconds or so. In the meantime, give us a shout out from wherever you're coming from in the chat. Do we have any other Midwesterners on the call?
There's some hailstorms that were out there.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, I got a picture of somebody holding one that looked like a baseball from the Spooner area in northern Wisconsin about a week and a half ago.
Yeah, it's been weird weather here. I don't know what you've, Oh, someone says Winona had hail last week also. Love coming from sunny California. Thanks for joining us, Justin. So yeah, I think we will go ahead and get going here. Couple of things I wanted to mention, and Brian, we'll introduce Brian first. That would probably be the best place. So I'm Faith Howard Mooney, the VP of Member Engagement at the Mortgage Collaborative, and so lucky today to have Brian Renton, who is the VP of Mortgage Sales and Processing from CCF Bank in Wisconsin. So he's my neighbor. CCF Bank joined us in December of 2020. So you've been around for a while. Thanks for doing this, Brian.
Having me.
And you want to share just a little bit before we get going here about CCF Bank and who you are?
CCF Bank, well, actually, so we started out a credit union conversion over, and I'm not going to go into too much details of it. We converted over in the early 90s and lived along in the lending side for a while. And actually, up until 2019, when M&A was really big in the banking industry, we were a big part of that. So CCF collaboratively purchased 5 banks in 4 years. And my bank was the second year. It was a trip. So my bank was the second last one to get bought, and they bought our bank for the mortgage division. We came with a couple of contracts that they were interested in. And up until then, they were purchasing asset-based banks and also strengthening their commercial department. So when they brought mine on in the actual mortgage sector, it brought them into a larger pool of product offerings. And then so what we ended up doing is taking the 5 banks and everybody that came with it, which were community banks, anywhere from $250 million to about $450 million, where now we've grown to a collective size of about $2 billion in assets, to say, how can we get from everybody that used to do 15 jobs in a very very limited resources, to expand outside of the circles that we've always lived in and try to find a way that we can operate to be more competitive with the digital world, with our larger regional partners or our competition, I should say. And so my job was basically to seek out all aspects of the bank, find out who did what, and set a path, which included technologies, resources, workflows, positions, titles, to say, here's how we're going to be competitive, and this is what tomorrow's going to look like. I hope you're all on board. If not, that's okay too. We have a lot of other community banks in the area, which we help place some people. But otherwise, my job was to create the new mortgage department for the bank. But priority one was keeping the culture alive to stay a community bank. So that's when I reached out to Mortgage Collaborative, because my acquisition was in 2019. And I needed more resources of people that had gone through things similar to what I've gone through. So I said, there's got to be this organization out there that has a pool of people that know what's going on. And then that's when I found your organization, which has been a great strength and a great partnership of mine since I came on board in 2020. So I wanted to also say thank you and a huge shout out to your organization on helping me get to where I am today.
Thank you. Kudos to you. Like 4 and you said 4 and 5 years, or 5 and 4 years?
years. It was
that's crazy.
It was. Yeah, I know the deposit side certainly went through their fair shares of ebbs and flows with trying to get all the accounts and program codes and it was a lot of project management, and that was really the key, was actually getting your project management strategies in place and continuing that all the way through. And if you can get that done, you can pretty much accomplish anything.
Well, and I've got a little birdie in my ear over here that has shared with me that you are joining us in Nashville for our conference. And that you're jumping right in and being a discussion leader for one of our sessions there. So appreciate the fact that you would do that. I think everybody on this call just picked up that Brian's probably a good resource if you're going through something within the network, because it sounds like he's experienced a lot of that. The other thing I will share with everybody on this call, it's kind of like hot off the press, which I didn't think about sharing, but will. Rohit Chopra is going to be at our conference. From CFPB. And we are so excited. We had the opportunity to meet with him in June when we were in Washington, D.C. And I will tell you that I expected kind of more of a government official person in the front of the room. And he was so gracious and conversational and so engaged in the conversation that he spent 30 minutes with us there, which we were all greatly appreciated. So others that aren't joining us for conference, you should hop on board and join us. It will be well worth it. So let's get into it a little bit then, Brian. Quieter week than normal, not a lot going on. A lot of that happened all in one week. It was either last week or the week before. But there were a few quick steps that kind of came out during the end of last week. One of them was purchase mortgage originations down 14.7% to an estimated $250 billion in the first 3 months of 2023. Based on what we're hearing from our network, that was not a surprising statistic or number for me. It's kind of what it is and what everybody's experiencing in the environment right now. With that, refinances fell to 21.1% to just $45 billion, which again, not surprising. Kind of refinance activity is typically engaged with lower interest rates. Some of it still happens because of life events that happen for people, but not surprising. The one thing that did those stick out to me, though, is a lot of people, the jumbo lending sector, and it experienced a rather large downturn, falling 36.2% from the fourth quarter. And that kind of surprised me. I'm not quite sure why, but I know that you guys implemented a jumbo product. So share with us. You know, like how that impacts your business or what the impact to the jumbo market has been to CCF.
I'll talk on behalf of us, but then I'm also talking on behalf of a couple other community banks and regional banks that did the same thing, whether it was either creating a product to be competitive with some of the national lenders that are out there, or push the limits on their qualifiers, or made their interest rates a little bit more engaged. And a lot of them created change from short-term arms to long-term arms to increase in competitiveness. I think back, and I don't know the specific date, but it was post-pandemic. There was a lot of money getting thrown into the economy. And I was in a local banking association meeting with several CFOs and bank presidents and people of multiple titles. And somebody made the comment that I never thought I would hear in banking. I've been in banking since the late 90s, was we have too much in deposits. And we all kind of chuckled at that. It was a unique quote to hear. And even it's a unique quote to say, because he was in the industry since the early 70s. And he says, I cannot remember a time when I can honestly say I have too much money in my bank and I can't lend out fast enough. And so, I mean, commercial development is going like crazy. The commercial lenders are piping things through. Mortgage lending was growing, but we needed to find secondary market was at all time low interest rates, or not all time low, but near historic low interest rates. So we were asked, how can we find ways to actually funnel out more money in the lending side to build our portfolio? And jumbo lending was one of the key pieces that a lot of people were mulling around. And the creation started. So all of a sudden you started hearing loan to values getting up to 90, 95. The doctor program started expanding back to where they were back in the heydays. The limits of jumbo, the expansion of appraisals. And so we did the same thing. We jumped on and we created a jumbo loan product and made sure it was going to meet all the standards. And we jumped in head first. And it's been a great portfolio because, as we all know, we're not seeing a lot of late payments. You know, it's a weird time that we're in where originations are shrinking, the economy is getting tightened, but we still aren't seeing the fallout of late payments and in the 30, 60, 90 categories. So we pushed forward on the jumbo side. For a couple of reasons, we've kept with the jumbo side, which, again, when you talked about the largest segment, the fallback was where we were all starting to experience operational costs. You know, we started to think about, should we pull back volume on jumbo? Should we not pull back volume on jumbo? And a lot of banks are making different decisions on this. As the conversation goes, is, you know, when you have lower volume, all of a sudden you have higher operational costs. So do you keep your product to feed the beast, or are you starting to do layoffs? You know, you have that trade-off of, am I willing to trade one for the other? Because right when we get out of this, we need to make sure that we have the staff in place that understand our systems, because as we all know, it hasn't been uncommon that when rates drop, they drop quickly. And finding staff is not that easy to do when everybody's trying to find staff quickly. So our bank, I can speak on behalf of us and a few others, we've decided to keep the jumbo products just to, again, try to use it to feed that B side. But I know a lot of people, when you do get that lower volume, that operational cost does get up there. I will say, you know, if you're going to jump into another direction of jumbo, you know, liquidity is a lot tighter than it used to be. You know, the deposit rates have been shrinking from historic highs. I think we got up to, I remember hearing a 8.9, almost 9% personal savings rates. That was great. I mean, you know, we were fat in the banking industry. And now we're not as low as we were. I think we got into the mid twos, around 2.5, 2.7. After pandemic, but we're still only hovering in the 4% mark, maybe like 4.5 or something like that in the last couple of weeks. So we don't have where we started to want to continue this product. We're nowhere near where we are at on a savings base. And I don't know if Faith, if you get to hear the same thing, are people saying the same thing on a night? I didn't hear regionally, but more on a nationwide level, or is anybody else experiencing that?
Anybody in the audience? If you're experiencing similar things or have done similar things that CCF has done, we're kind of hearing that same sort of story. We definitely heard which we thought was funny too, when it was like, oh my gosh, we have too much money. It's like, when in the world does that ever happen, right? But we did hear that from people, and it was very interesting because it almost happened. You know, we have around 270 lenders in our network. And so you see it, you hear it from one person, and then all of a sudden, in like a week's amount of time, it seemed like people kind of reached that point all at the same time, where it's like, oh, wait, what's going on here? We have too much money. So we definitely have heard that. I haven't heard like a sharp drop from anybody, particularly in jumbo, but we tend to hear more of the trends of, yeah, our business has dropped, not necessarily in a particular segment of someone's business, but throw in the chat, people, let us know kind of like what you experienced related to that. We have one thing within network, not necessarily just related to jumbo, but we have seen the growth in a lot of credit unions. With their business, increasing specifically on single family properties. And, you know, a lot of our credit unions are very similar to the community bank in world, both depositories, but both really tuned into what their network is in the banking environment and what their community is and what their community needs are in a very, very similar way.
Union side, I have friends that we have a large credit union presence in Wisconsin. We have several in the area. We have a very large one in our local markets. And you're right. The operational side is very similar to a community bank. And we're all pretty much saying the same thing on where they talked about the credit union portfolio, I believe increased 1 or 1.5% in the past week.
Yep.
It's that double-edged sword where there's not a lot of room for a lot of portfolio lending and banking and even in the credit union side. But if you're not offering a lot of those products, somebody else is, but you also want to make sure that you're not losing staff and not losing steam, because eventually your whole goal is, I'm going to put this on the paper right now. And as soon as markets drop, I'm going to hopefully hedge some of this off onto the secondary market, or, you know, bring in your servicing, to, you know, relieve some of the stress of everybody's actual savings rates going up, because, you know, we're, you know, again, the savings interest rates, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I know when I see the deposits rate sheets coming across my desk, it seems like every at least 2 weeks, we're having a slight increase in CD rates and savings rates and checking rates. And I know that's putting a further strain on the actual portfolio side, but we're just hoping to hang on until that economic change happens where we can start, you know, flipping over to the GSEs.
Yeah. That's hang on is a good, maybe a good motto for a lot of people for this year. We definitely do hear that in a number of different ways. Also within the network, the whole product development side to keep up with everyone else and what they're doing. It's always interesting to me because there's a lot of work that goes into establishing a product. I'm sure you faced that when you did your jumbo product as well, rolling it out to a team, gaining adoption and those types of things. But what we've heard right now is, especially related to things like doctor's loans and some of those more niche things, it's like, well, you almost have to have them, even though you don't get a lot of utilization of them, because other people have them. And just the fact that you don't have them, even though somebody doesn't use them, is maybe losing to your competition just because of the advertising related to that. So I don't know if you've seen any of that in your environment at all, but we do hear that quite frequently from people within network that we're going to develop this because we don't know. That we're going to have a lot of adoption, but we're going to develop it anyway, just as a way of staying competitive with the other people in our market.
With that, I mean, you're right. When you're looking at an ROI and a new product, and everybody has to be involved from, you know, technologies, your workflows, your core integrations, compliance, which compliance ends up being, you know, one of the larger hurdles that you have to get over.
Always.
Picking on the jumbo one, banks are looking for deposits. You know, there's the hope. You know, obviously, you can't, you know, say you want this loan, you're going to open your accounts here. But you're hoping that with the actual loan will come some deposits. So when you're looking at just a straight ROI in the mortgage alone, it might not be what you're looking for, but you are making some assumptions on. We can hypothetically say that our bankers or the mortgage staff will do a good job of cross-selling and again drawing those deposits to see if that's going to help create a new product. But you're right, when you talked about niche products, this is a different call that I was on, but I know that on a local side, we've experienced it. And personally, I've experienced it talking about new construction niche products. The amount of banks that I've seen that have gone from the double close from pandemic through post, and obviously the drop in availability of real estate, new construction is the business. You know, there's no house sale, but they're building houses. So if you're not in the construction market, you're missing a large segment where I've seen a lot of banks, which flipping over from a community banking side to flip over from a double close to a single close is a monstrous task. There's not a lot of great resources out there to help you accomplish those compliance woes, and then also how you integrate into whatever system that you're working with. So, you know, we ended up launching one and then we ended up relaunching it after we learned some errors and licked our wounds and said, okay, now that we have it figured out, we're going to relaunch it. So we relaunched a new single close. And then I've heard products that are out there doing like 12-month locks. I think it was on a nationwide level. The first time I think I ever heard of that was several years ago is from Guaranteed Rate, where they would do a long-term lock. Well, then a lot of local banks were like, you know what? I think I can figure out how to do a guaranteed lock. So then I put myself to task and saying, how can we figure it out? So we launched a 12-month lock on purchase new construction where the builder's holding the finances and you partner with your commercial departments to say, hey, you know what? We have the approval in place. Go ahead and let them build a couple more houses. We'll do a 12-month lock. And it doesn't cost us to unlock the loan because it's all portfolio. So you unwind it and you rewind it. So there's no skin off our back if they say, well, I want to walk away because we never had the loan in the first place. But otherwise, if we had it locked, we can. So there's a lot of, again, creativity that kind of comes in having the conversations with people to say, you know what, how can we create a buzz, a market share, and then grow that business, which again, commercial deposits, you know, we're all community, you know, on the community banking side, commercial can actually get a builder to build a couple more houses with you than the other ones because you're actually working on both sides, grow the deposit base, and it's all working together interdepartmentally.
Yeah. Definitely here in the Twin Cities to find like housing that is an established house right now is a challenge. And I know that it's that way everywhere, but we do have like a huge amount of new construction going on right now. That's what it is. One of the things that I think is interesting related to our new construction is what people are doing instead of pre-selling it. They're kind of hanging on to it until it's that maybe the inside isn't done yet, but the outside shell is. And I found that they're doing that so that they can adjust their pricing according, have a better gauge of pricing closer to the end of when that thing will close from a builder perspective on what they sell it for. So they're holding on to them closer until finishes are being done in the non-custom environment. And then they'll come in and sell, you know, the five that they have at a certain stage, you know, you can have one of these five kind of thing. And I think that we've seen prices here increase because of that in the construction space.
Speaking of, we have the metropolitan markets, when you talk about price increases, it's not necessarily just, you know, the labor costs and the interest rates that the builders are paying. I had a large builder reach out to me directly and said, I'm building this many houses a year. I want you to put together a 10-year ARM for me that I can advertise at 4.99. He's like, and you, I just need you to tell me every week how many points I need to pay you on the backside to achieve that rate. He's like, so it ends up being have to be 8 points, 9 points, 2 points, 10 points. He's like, just tell me how to figure it out. All I want to be able to do is, and I think he started at 399, but when I, you know, he's like, just let me know what I need to do to be able to have a big sign in the garage. And so when we're talking about the exponential costs that are adding to the actual new construction or purchase rates, these things are happening on a nationwide level where on the backside, there's money being shifted between and it's insane. The thought of what the request is. And so then when obviously you start to educate them a little bit on some of the compliance laws, and how those all work. And again, and how points are the change in accounting on how points are realized in the banking industry versus the way that they used to be realized. There's a lot of conversation that happens that may not go nowhere, but at some point somebody's going to take on these types of things, or they're already trying to hedge these prices and it creates an expense on the consumer. Just like saying, hey, we're all going to start paying student loan debts again. You know, like there's expenses to the consumer that just keep going on and on and on, which is further leading to the tightening that we're walking into. And now we're walking in the winter. Which winter?
In our neck of the woods, winter means winter, right? Things shut down.
Yep, we have the expenses that come with it. And then when you talked about the reasons for refinances on the economic woes, you know, our divorce rate is up to 64%, and you know, the strains on balances and stuff like that. So it's going to be a cold winter.
Yep. Leading us into like a really good conversation, because one of the things that that I saw this week, that the headline was, and I did share the headline with you, but the headline was something about, and here's the reason why people can't get into a new home. It's because they're choosing to not buy a new home, and because they'd rather, you know, escalate their credit card debt instead. They figured out that a new home is not affordable. They're not going to be able to go there. So now we've seen credit card debt extend. I'm not quite sure. Headlines are one thing. They're trying to grab attention. Not sure that, I really believe that people are consciously making that decision that I can't buy a home now, so I'm going to, you know, rack up a bunch of credit card debt. But We are like at a milestone, surpassing $1 trillion, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, in outstandings. Would love to hear your thoughts on like credit card debt, where it's going, how you think potential has impacted your business. Any wisdom that you can give us on that, I would love to hear.
Get into the credit card stuff on a loose basis. I'm going to kind of go back on the comment that you made before about the instead of, I think you said the headline was reasons why people aren't getting into housing and their money into credit card debt. You know, it's unique. I have friends and business partners that own commercial residential real estate, typically in the 8, 12, 24 plex side. And the last meeting that we had on a couple of our developments in the metro area was the rehab of the turnover of the quality of products in the rentals. So like right now, we'll take, for example, the hotel industry. I believe it's on a 7-year where every 7 years or 10 years that they contract the companies to actually make them look fresh inside. We're now reviewing that on a rental side. Because people are looking for the younger generation, or I should say, when we pulled the statistics, the millennial generation, and then into the Gen Y generation is looking for that nicer product, and also having the memory of their parents going through the housing crisis, and so they have the not wanting to have the responsibility, which at this point, how can you blame them? And then also the wanting to have something that is always nice. And so there's a lot of companies that are owning the larger developments of multi-units that are going through those refresh more frequently. So they can have and transitioning from the hollow to the solid core doors, the solid surface countertops, and almost treating today's under 40 like somebody that wants to lease a car versus own a car. And in some respects, not a bad direction. I mean, everybody has their own lifestyle, just like some people choose a lease because they want to have a new car every other year. And some people want to own a car because they understand that car, I can't really call an investment, but they have their own reasons for owning a car and not having payment debts. And the idea, the conversations that we're walking through is housing is turning into the same thing. Do I want to lease or do I want to own? And the mentality of it is changing to be more like car ownership, as opposed to the way that my generation and the generations above me have always viewed homeownership very different than owning a car on how that looks. So, and again, when you talk to the credit card debt, that's the whole thing is having things that are newer, shinier, the expenses of the wants in the mentality of the needs. Like you said, I read that report and I kind of skimmed over it. I missed the 1 trillion mark though. So I'm glad that you brought that up just for me to kind of choke on it one more time. I forgot about it quickly. So now I'm just going to be flashing through my brain again. Yeah. That whole auto loan balance debt is increasing because, people like to have that new. And I don't know if there's a long-term realization of what's happening, similar to what we went through with the student loans, the rise of student loan debt that happened through Generation X into Generation Y, where, back in the day, college was like $8,000. And, obviously it isn't anymore. I have my oldest is a freshman going into I drop him off on Thursday, and I'm very well aware of what that price tag that he's going to be facing is going to be. And we talk about ROIs on degrees and those types of things. But on a credit card debt, that's further putting the pinch on the actual amount of savings that people are putting in the banks is decreasing because, as the credit card debt and the actual monthly expenses increase, and also the late pays on the credit cards are increasing, especially in the younger generation, it's further putting the strain on all of our industries, and not necessarily just because of our consumers, but the actual bottom lines of where we need our savings rates to get, not saving rates, our saving balances to get to. So obviously we're not able to pay the deposits that much to really offset any type of income because we're back to where we were. So it's like when you said, I like how you quoted, I kind of want to get a shirt. What do you say? Just hang on. Right? I think I said something and you pulled it into almost like a soundbite that I want to get on the back of a t-shirt now. Where it's like, it's just time to hang on for however the winds.
You are not alone. You are not alone. You are in this with a bunch of other people. We are stronger together, but we do hear similar things from time to time. Yeah, I think that amenities for, I'm the generation like beyond, way beyond you even. Amenities and nice things are a big deal, I see, with the people that I know that are significantly younger than I am, and they're willing to pay the price for that.
Gone are the days that you use a Wonder Bread bag for your lunch bag. Generational quotes in there. That's the one right there.
Yeah. Well, and you know that because you have kids coming up in that range that people are oftentimes willing to pay for that. It did share in this article that young Americans 18 to 29 had the highest credit card delinquency rates in the first quarter of 2023, with it 8.5%, getting really close to that 90-day behind on payment. This may be kind of a soapbox for me. I'm going to get on my soapbox. That is like our responsibility in teaching people how to financially be responsible. And it's like, I see it coming. There's a change happening where, you know, a lot of our lender members are going in places and doing education on what is a mortgage and how do you qualify and all of those types of things to younger and younger individuals, which I think is absolutely positively great and can only enhance things like, you know, people understanding credit card debt and, you know, what they can, the assistance they can get even from their bank in helping them. I know community banks are all into those types of things. And so I think some of the onus on that is maybe a little bit on the older generation and in like teaching people, you know, what's what they need to do and what's most important from a financial perspective. So I hope someday we can get to the point where financial education is part of a child's education. I think the more they know, the sooner, the better they are. And then you end up, you have a really responsible kid. I have a really responsible older kid who's very focused on that, but that's not the same for everybody. So, we're at the end of the hour, the middle of the hour, at the bottom of the hour, whatever you want to call it today. So appreciate you having this conversation with me. It has been a lot of fun. I cannot wait to see you in Nashville. I may have to pop into your first session and being a discussion leader. So appreciate you being willing to do that with us. And for those of us that come see Director Chopra at our conference in Nashville, it's September 10th through 12th, still time to get on board with us. We would love to have you there. And we would love to have you back here with the Last Week in Mortgage Today at the same time next week. Thanks so much, Brian, for doing this with us. We appreciate you.
For more information about how you can get involved with TMC Connect and witness the power of the network firsthand, please visit us at mortgagecollaborative.com.